Have you been wandering through life with no purpose? Are you looking for a catalyst to change your life for the better? These Servant Leadership podcasts will change your perspective of yourself, others, and your creator. This transformational leadership approach uses seven simple tools to help you understand your purpose in life. Please join Dave Kuhnert and Chris Seegers for today's podcast.
I think we'll start off the program just kind of giving a brief overview of what this Servant Leadership podcast is going to be about. The purpose of this podcast is multifaceted. It's meant to be more than just a simple podcast that people listen to. It's meant to be a catalyst for change in your life. It's meant to change your perspective of life in relation to yourself, others, and your creator. Additionally, we want this to create a shared mental model of leadership and what leadership really is, to inspire a common vocabulary that assists us in communicating with clarity and brevity while moving towards a transformational leadership approach. It's going to consist of a framework for life that we're going to call Their Here Path, or THP, with seven simple tools to help us figure all that out. These tools are timeless, and they're applicable interculturally to any age, gender, or background. At the end of all of this, hopefully we're able to utilize these tools to help people figure out what their purpose is here on life and to live a transformational life.
So you and I have talked a little bit about this. We've all read a lot of great leadership books. What do you think differentiates this content? Why is it timeless? Why does it stand the test of time?
Great question, Chris. You know, when you look at some of this material, these are really simple tools that are kind of common sense that everyone can use. It doesn't matter how old the person is or what their background is. It breaches that particular facet. So as you look through some of this material and as we go through it, hopefully this will help people better understand how they should be living life and how that living our lives and what we're supposed to be doing in life, living it the way God intended us to live it, is transformational. And it's transformational not only for me, but for those around me. It changes eternity, yours and theirs. So let's start off deciding what leadership is. So Chris, when you throw that question out there, hey, what do you think of when you think of leadership? What do you usually say to when somebody asks you what leadership is all about?
I think it's people have different understandings of it, but I think a couple words that come to mind are influence and power. I think if you ask me, well, what's a leader? Well, it's somebody that can influence or has power to move people in a certain direction.
When I ask this in group settings, I get the same direction that you're heading with it. And it's all right, right? I mean, it's all heading in the same direction of what a leader is or what a leader does. But nobody really seems to sit down and think about what a leader is or what leadership is and really take the time to define what that is. And having spent most of my adult life in the military, and the Army defines leadership as the art of influencing others to accomplish a mission by providing purpose, motivation, and direction in order to improve the organization. So that's a really long, complex definition. But John Quincy Adams said, he was our sixth president, said that if your actions inspire others to dream more, learn more, do more, or become more, you're a leader. So we look at these definitions, pretty wordy, pretty tough to wrap our mind around. So for the purposes of what we're going to talk about in servant leadership, we're going to make it really simple. We're going to break this down to what people can remember. And we're simply going to define leadership as influencing others to get there. And just like you said, it's about influencing others. And that was a great definition to talk about. So we want to influence others to get there. It uses that word influence that you said. And we're going to talk about that in great detail as we go through this program. And it focuses on a predetermined place or a goal that we're trying to reach. And we're just going to call that our there, where we're trying to get to, our goal. And all of these characteristics of servant leadership. Now, this definition is obviously not all-encompassing, but it's sufficient to describe what leadership is all about. As we look at this definition, we see that we're trying to influence others to get there. The there that we're trying to get to comes from the basic structure of how life works. We have a there, we have a here, and we have a path. The there is where we're trying to get to. This could be a goal or a place in life that we're trying to get to. The here is where you are currently, not just physically, but where your current reality is. And finally, the path is what links the here to the there. So there, here, and path is the three components of influencing others to get there. And this is really just how life works. We have somewhere we want to go, somewhere we currently are, and a plan to move there, a path to follow. Along that path, we're going to have to act, learn, and adjust. I mean, think about walking down a path through the woods. You turn the corner, and maybe your path isn't as straight as you thought it would be. So as you take a step down the path, you learn, and then you adjust your path to move back towards your there.
And I think, too, you talk about the shared mental model. And so all these words, there, here, path, and act, learn, and adjust, all these things are going to be defined further. So this is just kind of the macro level introduction. But when I first took the course, I didn't quite understand, okay, well, what are you talking about there, right? It's a word, but what does that actually mean? But we're going to get into that deeper. It's just having a shared vocabulary.
That's really key to coming away from this is this common vocabulary that we can talk about to create clarity. So shared understanding, shared mental model of what we're trying to do. So there's a couple different ways to use this THP or there, here, path process. When using there, here, path, it's for the creative process. This is where we want to try to be in life. We want to try to be in the creative aspect. We want to direct our lives through the creative process of deciding where we want to go and what we want to accomplish. We come up with our there, figure out our here, our current reality, and then we move from here to there. The other way to use this, the there, here, path process, is when we are problem solving. Instead of using THP, there, here, path, we would use HTP, or here, there, path. This happens when our here, or our current reality, becomes untenable. We no longer like our here and need to change it, so to accomplish this, we need to know what about our current reality isn't very good, decide what we don't want anymore as far as our here goes, and choose a new there. And then we find the path that links the two together. Once we have our there identified, we just begin moving down the path towards it.
The current reality part is so difficult for everybody to have honesty, but I think that most people that are interested in this course understand I'm not going where I want to be or I'm not living the life I want to be, and that's what they're searching for. And that's what we're hoping that this course can help with is a really clear understanding of who you are, shortcomings, good, bad, the ugly, where you want to go, and then making sure that you're going the right place, the right there.
Absolutely. And probably the first five or six podcasts here, we're going to talk a lot about the there, the having clarity, as you said, that word, that simple word is so important, clarity of the there. And then from there on out, we're going to talk all about the here or current reality. We're pretty good at coming up with our there. It's hard at first, but once we've figured out what we're trying to achieve in life, and then we got to figure out where we are, and we're not very good at knowing our own current reality. We tend to think we're further down this path of life than we really are, or that we're better at things than we really are, or we discount our own strengths to the point that we're not in touch with our own current reality very well. So we have to spend a lot of time on our here. But as we go through today's episode, we're going to talk more about this there and really focus on that. And as you said, you have to have clarity of your there. Clarity, that one simple little word, creates unity of effort. When we have an absence of clarity, there are normally going to be consequences that come with that. When our there or our goal is for ourselves, we have to have internal clarity. We have to know what we want. When the there, the goal is for the team, we want to make sure that we have enough external clarity through communication to create that shared vision for all team members. It's simply vision casting. So when we think about this there, say we're standing at the base of a mountain and we have the team together, or it's just you and I there, and I point at the top of the mountain and there's a whole mountain range there, and I say, let's go there. Let's go to the top of that mountain. Well, as we start moving down the path together, we're going to the same place. But as we go further down the path, I start to realize that our paths are diverging because I was pointing at one particular peak, but you weren't clear on which mountain peak it was, and now you're drifting towards another peak. So now we have divergent paths. Although we both thought we were going to the same place and it started off real good, what happened along that path is now we're going to two different places. We didn't have the clarity that we needed to get there.
So would that apply to marriage as well, for example?
For sure. Yeah, if we don't have a good there of what we're trying to achieve in our relationships, and we haven't sat down and communicated that of what we're trying to achieve, we end up maybe initially when we first get married, life is good and it's just awesome. And as we move down that path, we start separating, we start going in different directions, and we have divergent paths, and soon we're drifting apart. So whenever there's a lack of clarity, whether it's for myself or for the team, or as you said, in marriage, whenever there's lack of clarity, there's going to be consequences. There's going to be friction. So we want to make sure that we do everything we can to communicate where we're trying to go together very, very clearly. As we move down that path and get closer to our there, that's generally where those paths start to separate. The further we get, the more divergent they become if we're not clear. This could cause a potentially high degree of friction, or it could even destroy the team. Our words matter. We need to communicate with clarity exactly where we're trying to go to or what we're trying to achieve to eliminate as much of that friction as possible. In fact, in the military, you know, we talk about this all the time. In every mission statement, we talk about having a task and a purpose, having clarity and brevity of what we're trying to achieve. So every single mission statement is going to contain those two components of a task and a purpose for that task. So task and purpose. This is going to create unity of effort and eliminate the confusion or friction that might be there. So essentially, you're going to begin with the end in mind of what you're trying to achieve, and then you're going to go through what we call backward planning. So once you've stated your purpose of what you're trying to achieve, you'd create key milestones along that path that will help you reach the end or the there. So the backward planning process is exceptionally good at assisting the user with planning complex operations.
We've had conversations about what people call vision leak. Do you think vision leak, or kind of a fuzziness of the there, happens because there's not a common language, there's not a common framework, or what do you think is one of the main reasons why people have divergent theirs? Or do you think it's just initially a lack of communication?
It could be both. It could be, if I have lack of communication, I'm not going to have clarity. And clarity is going to come through stating what I want to achieve in terms that everyone understands and repeating it over and over and over again. In fact, research shows that we normally have to hear things or repeat things 7 to 11 times for others to get it. Multiple times in multiple formats for people to finally hear what we're saying. And we see this in Scripture. I mean, God gives us the perfect example of this. He tells us the same stories over and over and over. He creates something perfect and good, gives it to man with clear consequences and clear expectations of what he wants done, and man fails to meet those expectations over and over and over again and has to suffer the consequences. Then God steps in and redeems his creation and makes it good again. We see this all through Scripture, from the story of Adam and Eve to Noah to Moses in the Exodus, David, and the list goes on until the unfolding of the redemptive events of Christ coming as a child. So God is giving us the framework for the story several times to teach us, to get us to listen, because he knows that clarity comes through repetition. Repetition of the material in different forms, different settings, and through stories. So hearing things over and over and over again. In fact, we like to say that when you've said it enough times that you're so sick of saying it that you're ready to vomit, people are hearing it for the first time.
And yeah, and this would be a good place to put the Bible verse, you know, write it on your forehead, bind it on your heart. Because, I mean, that's what we're talking about a little bit, is this, we just forget. I mean, humans are forgetful. And so that's fascinating that God realizes that. And you see it with the Israelites. Hey, I'm going to tell you where you need to go. And they say, well, we're going to forget about God, and we're going to follow other idols, or we're going to, you know, wander in the, whatever it may be. But I think that's why this course and the material is so important, to continue to kind of refresh yourself, because we're so forgetful.
Yeah, God sees it. He knows it, that we're so fallible to this. We just have to keep repeating our vision over and over. So you talked about the vision leak. How does that happen? Well, we're either not communicating what we're trying to communicate, our definitions or our vocabulary is not understood, and people just aren't getting what we're saying, or we're not saying it often enough. We really have to just 7 to 11 times. And I like to tell the story that I explained the repetition to clarity 7 to 11 times to my wife, and then she said, well, that's why. I don't understand why you don't understand what I'm trying to tell you. Why do you don't have clarity? I tell you things 7 to 11 times. 7 to 11 times, yes, she does tell it to me, but it's all in 5 minutes. That's nagging. That's not repetition.
Hopefully your wife doesn't hear this podcast.
Yeah, I'm hoping that she doesn't tune in at all. So we've said we need a lot of repetition to have that clarity, and we said that we want to have a there. We want to have their here path. We want to be able to influence others to get there. So let's take a look at some of the greatest leaders in history. And Chris, when I ask this, I usually get a lot of different answers, but who do you think some of the greatest leaders in history were?
Historically, a couple come to mind. George Washington is one of the big ones, and then Abraham Lincoln. And I think one of the questions is, why did they come to mind, right? Why do we think those people are somebody to be admired and think they're great leaders?
Yeah, for sure. Generally, I get a lot of the same answers. I'll get George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King Jr. And so you're right. What did make those leaders great? And I'd submit that it was the there that they had. It was an awesome there. It was a great there. They all had one thing in common. They were committed to that there unto death if necessary. So regardless of what history character you're looking at, whether it was Jesus or Martin Luther King Jr., they had an awesome there. Whether it was freedom or abolitionism, whatever it was, they had a great there, and they had to overcome a lot to achieve it. It required a lot of commitment, so that one little word of commitment separated them from most of the other leaders throughout history.
So do you think that the commitment and clarity is what's so essential? And I guess my question is, are people just genetically good leaders, or do you think it is, hey, if you understand and you kind of work towards becoming a good leader, you've got commitment and clarity and you can, you know, convey that to other people? Do you think it's a genetic thing, or do you think it's something that can be learned and trained?
It can for sure be learned and trained. Some people are more naturally gifted with it than others, but I think we can teach this and people can inculcate this and really do well with it. It just takes practice. It takes repetition. Communication and being able to communicate well and provide clarity of where you're trying to get to and cast vision isn't easy for everyone at first, but with practice, we can get there.
So we've been talking about the THP or their here path. You know, can you give us a real world example of what this looks like?
Yeah, let's do a historical example. So their here path being the framework for life. Let's look at the Civil War, and we'll talk about the battle for Little Round Top. And kind of how this went down is in late June of 1863, the Confederate Army under General Robert E. Lee was massing near Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Gettysburg would arguably become the key battle of the Civil War. It was the pivotal moment for the momentum shift in the Civil War. It was one of the bloodiest battles. It took place on July 1st through the 3rd of 1863, and more Americans would die in that battle than the Revolutionary War, the War of 1812, and the Spanish-American War combined. More than 55,000 lives were lost in those 3 days. So the 20th Maine, commanded by Lieutenant Colonel Joshua Chamberlain, was ordered to get to Gettysburg as quick as possible. They marched 100 miles in 4 days to get there. They were carrying heavy loads in the summer heat as they marched towards what they now knew would be a very large battle. So, Chris, if you can imagine marching 25 miles a day, carrying everything that you owned, musket, ball, powder, wool uniforms. They're not wearing Air Jordans and wick away material. I mean, this is a pretty rough time to be moving through the summer heat. Well, on July 1st of 1863, the battle began. The cavalry unit under General John Buford managed to seize the high ground near Gettysburg called Cemetery Ridge. They held the high ground through the first night and prevented the Southern units from gaining a foothold. This would prove decisive over the next 2 days. As the 20th Maine's moving towards Gettysburg on July 1st, they run into these 13 Union soldiers heading in the wrong direction. So they stop these guys, and Chamberlain's brother interviews them to find out why they're moving away from the battle. They explain that they had been separated from their unit. This was obviously not the case, so Chamberlain's brother reminded him that the penalty for desertion is to face the firing squad. Chamberlain decided to talk to the men himself. He found out that all 13 of them were sharpshooters and hailed from Maine as well. He told the men that the 20th Maine was heading to Cemetery Ridge and they intended to fight. They were going to do their duty and had sworn an oath to do just that. Chamberlain told them that they were welcome to come and join the 20th Maine, but if they came with, they had to fight. If they chose not to come along, they could head straight back to Maine because he wouldn't shoot good Maine men. After some deliberation, all 13 men decided to join Chamberlain in the 20th Maine as they headed towards Gettysburg.
And I think that's a really great example right there of, right, the communication of the there. Is these guys, these 13 sharpshooters, had obviously lost the why, the there. And they were like, we're out of here. You know, we don't believe in this anymore. We're deserting. We're going back. And so it was great communication for Chamberlain to say, look, this is what we're doing. Here's our there. And you have total freedom, because we all have freedom of choice of what our there is. You have freedom to either desert, I'm going to let you go, I'm not going to kill you like I should, or you can come with us. But here's our there, and I want you to commit to the there. And I think that communication is pretty transparent in most great leaders, is they understand this is, I'm going to be able to communicate my there to these people.
Yeah, he used a lot of clarity. He told them exactly what was expected of him. He gave them very clear expectations and very clear consequences. If you come with, you have to fight. If you don't, well, hit the road. Maine's the other way. So as the 20th Maine's approaching Gettysburg, Colonel Vincent, who is Chamberlain's boss, his commanding officer, tells him that Cemetery Ridge is now being manned by most of the Union forces, but the ridge is shaped like a J. So if you can imagine Cemetery Ridge as a strip of high ground in the shape of almost like a fish hook. And at the end of that little J, of the bend in the J, is a hill called Little Round Top. The hill had been unintentionally left unmanned, and if the Confederate forces were to put cannons on top of it, they'd be able to fire straight down the Union lines. And this kind of fire would be called, in the military terms, inflayed fire. It means it would be flanking fire. So they would aim their cannons straight down the line, and that entire ridge line could then be bombarded with cannon fire, causing the Union forces to withdraw. So it would be hitting them right in the flank, and there's no way that they'd be able to hold that ridge line. So he told Chamberlain to defend Little Round Top. He said, hold at all hazards. That's how they talked back then. We would have said, hold at all costs or something. But Colonel Vincent says, hold at all hazards. So he gave Chamberlain his there. So understanding his mission, Chamberlain moves his 386-man battalion to the crest of Little Round Top. He positions his men in two ranks. Their lines form an L shape. At the center of the L, where the line angled, Chamberlain positions himself next to a large boulder. So he's at the center of the formation where he can best control his forces. The boulder would serve to anchor his line. He used this L formation to prevent the Confederates from coming around their flank. To this day, if you go up on Little Round Top, you can still see that boulder. It's very prominent. It's got a plaque on it. It held the center of his line. Shortly after moving into position, the Confederates sent two regiments from Alabama, commanded by General Hood, to attack up the hill. The fighting was really fierce. The Confederates advanced to a point where the muzzles of their muskets could have touched the muskets of the 20th Maine. They could not dislodge Chamberlain and his men, so they retreated back down the hill. The 20th Maine had held the key terrain, but they were beat up. The vegetation of the thickly wooded hill had been mowed down by the thousands of musket rounds that had been fired. There was a heavy smoke filling the air from the musket fire, and small fires had started. Many of the Chamberlain's men were on the ground, and they were dead or wounded, and all of them were thirsty and tired.
And I think, you know, we've talked about clarity and commitment, and right here is an easy place for Chamberlain to lose the commitment. And I think that you've communicated on the fact that people are so intelligent, we can convince ourselves that our there is shifted. So he could have easily convinced himself, no, instead of hold at all hazards, which is my there is really saving my men, so we should desert, we should run. And instead he showed that commitment.
Yeah, he stuck to his mission. He knew what he was supposed to do. He had clarity of his objective, and he told his men exactly what they had to do. So they were bought in. So General Hood now, he's going to add a Texas regiment to the two Alabama regiments, and the Confederates are going to come up the hill for a second time. So this time they decide to send one of the regiments further around the flank of the 20th Maine to try to get behind them. Chamberlain sees this happening, and the Texas regiment's moving around the L, so he orders his second rank to execute this complex sidestep maneuver to spread them out into a single file. And they're doing this all while under enemy fire. And as the Confederates on the flank begin charging up the hill, guess who's on that far flank? These 13 sharpshooters are. And these guys prove to be extremely lethal. They start pouring this lethal fire into the Confederate ranks, killing several of the senior officers and leaders. By all accounts, the lethality of their fire is what prevented the 20th Maine from breaking in that second charge. Despite that accurate fire, the 20th Maine was pushed out of position five times during the second charge, but they managed to fight back into position each time. So the aftermath of this charge, of this second charge, you have Chamberlain standing there. This has got to be really hard for him to stomach. One third of his forces are on the ground, dead or dying. He himself had been wounded twice. He had been shot in the scabbard of his sword, and it caused this giant contusion on his leg. And a stray round had hit the boulder next to his foot, and the rock fragments had gone into his ankle. So he's hobbled up a little bit. His men are tired and worn down, and now they're down to less than two rounds per man. So, Chris, what's going through your mind if you're Chamberlain at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think, once again, another pivotal moment of the commitment. And, I mean, to be honest, I'm thinking, guys, we've lost this battle. We need to retreat.
That's what's really what Chamberlain is thinking. He knows he can't hold a third charge with such limited amount of ammunition and so few men. There's no way they're going to hold Little Round Top, and it's by sitting there in a defensive position. So Chamberlain gathers his company commanders together, and he tells them to have his men fix bayonets. And he tells them, we're going to charge down the hill into the enemy forces. And as they charge down the hill, what he wants to have happen is for the men on the side of the L to come forward on line with the others and swing like a barn door, is what he called it. Swing like a barn door as we come down the hill, so we charge into the enemy on line. So you can imagine what's going through the men right now. What are they thinking? This guy's lost his mind. We have a whole lot less people than the enemy does. We're out of ammunition, for all intents and purposes, and he's asking us to fix bayonets and charge down the hill. But Chamberlain gave the command. He ordered the charge, and he led from the front. He drew his saber, stepped across that boulder, and the 20th Maine bravely charged down the hill and caught the Confederate regiments by complete surprise. Not understanding what was happening, the Confederates retreat from the battle. The 20th Maine held Little Round Top. The next day, July 3rd, General Lee, the Confederate commander, gives the orders to General Pickett to march his men across the wheat field and assault the ridgeline in one last effort to win the battle. So the rest of Cemetery Ridge is now under attack. This becomes known as Pickett's Charge. General Pickett's men were determined to win, but they were decimated, and the Union had secured a major victory in the Civil War that would shift the momentum to the north. The Confederates retreated across the river that evening, and the battle was over on July 4th of 1863. Joshua Chamberlain goes on to receive the Medal of Honor for his actions at Little Round Top. He later would preside over the surrender of General Lee at Appomattox Courthouse, where he's criticized for having his men salute the defeated Confederates. As it would turn out, this simple act of respect would go a long way during the restoration of the war. Chamberlain would go on to serve four consecutive terms as the governor of Maine and would die in 1914.
Let's just kind of get into, we've talked initially about the THP process, the their hair process, and you gave us this real world example, historical example. So break it down again for us. What's the there, the hair, and the path in this story?
So let's think back through the story. When Chamberlain first came up into position and Colonel Vincent tells him what his mission is, he gives him his task and his purpose. He explains how critical Little Round Top is to the defense of Cemetery Ridge. And he says, hold at all hazards. Key words, hold at all hazards. No matter what, you have to hold this hill. And Chamberlain understood, that's my there. The here, the current reality was, they just marched for 4 days. They have these 13 sharpshooters attached to them. They're arrayed in an L-shaped formation, and they're going to be in a defensive posture. The here, the current reality, as it does as we start moving down that path, is always changing. So our here changes throughout the story. Chamberlain's here changes. He starts off in a defensive position in an L-shaped formation, fully armed with a bunch of bullets for each man, and over the three charges, gets down to two rounds per man, and a third of his force killed or wounded, unable to fight.
So what's important? We've talked about clarity and commitment in the there. What's important about understanding the here?
So the here, current reality, where we are, it's really hard to get there if we don't know where we are, if we're not in touch with reality. If he decides that, oh, no, we can hold in a defensive position, or if he decides my current reality is different, I don't need to necessarily hold this hill, history could have been very, very different. Instead, he does a good assessment of what he has on hand, the forces, the friendly forces and the enemy forces. He understands that current reality and knows that there's no way he can hold in a defensive position anymore. So the only path left to victory as he does this act, learn, adjust process is to have the men fix bayonets. And he demonstrates his commitment himself. He demonstrates extreme leadership at this point in time when he draws his sword and he's the first one to start charging down the hill. The men follow. They understand that they're serving something greater than themselves. So the there is something greater than them. They are part of that, and they're going to be recognized for being part of that. They charge down the hill, and that's the path as they surprise the Confederates and accomplish their there by holding Little Round Top. If Chamberlain had said, no, I'm going to serve my men, and I'm going to pull them off of this hill and save their lives, he would not have been accomplishing the there. He would have been letting down the larger mission, the larger there, of serving the entire army. So we can see the there here path pretty clearly in Chamberlain's story here. Let's think about this in other terms. And what we're going to talk about in the next podcast is having a there for your life. So we can have these little theres, these little goals that we want to achieve, but we want to have a purpose for our life. Do you have a purpose for your life? Do you know where your current, what your current reality is really all about? And if you laid out a path to help you accomplish your there. So in our next podcast, we're going to talk about this transcendent there, a there that you can't achieve in this life, a there that's going to give you a direction for life. In fact, Mark Twain said, the two greatest days in a man's life are the day he's born and the day he figures out why. So what we're going to talk about next time is, why am I here? What is my purpose on this earth? What does God want me to accomplish here? I want to thank everybody for listening and being a part of this podcast and really appreciate you participating.
If you would like to offer feedback to any of the Servant Leadership podcasts, please go to our Facebook page and click on the comment section. You can also check us out online at trueservantleadership.com. Our site will soon have videos for the tools that we recommend using, and we will be adding additional content to the website in the future, including links for these podcasts. All of our material comes from the book Servant Leadership, Influencing Others to Get There by Leading a Transformational Life. If you're interested in the book, you can find it at Amazon.com. Both the paperback and the electronic version are available for order. The electronic version is only $1.99, and all of the proceeds from the book go to charity. Thanks for listening. Influencing Others to Get There, Serving Others, and most of all, thanks for leading with the example of a transformational life set by our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.